Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, it is Toy Department time. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. I think we're probably doing a quick one today out of necessity because we had some scheduling issues.
Well, if I want a shower before I go to work, we're doing a quick one, that's for sure.
That is fair. Let's jump into stuff because we actually do have a fair amount of things to talk about.
Pretty big list.
I'm just gonna roll in order. How's that?
I don't know what that means, but sure.
I'm gonna roll in the order that is written down on this list. That's what it means.
the order that you happen to write it down on the piece of paper you're holding in your hand right now.
Correct.
All right.
And that means we are starting with the Tina Fey Peacock comedy, Girls 5 Eva.
Oh, good. This should get us on a nice pace for a short show because I only watched one of them, and I have nothing to say about
it. Do.
Literally nothing.
That's all, pretty much. This is on Peacock, and apparently you need to have Peacock Premium to watch more than one episode.
Correct.
Right? That's pretty much the deal. It's enjoyable, and I think it's doing fairly well for them. But you know, it's the typical Tina Fey sitcom, right? It has that 30 Rock. With maybe a little less of that insanity.
It's not very funny, I didn't think, in the first episode anyway. And look, maybe there was some pilot work that they had to do or what have you, but just like it felt extremely, I don't know if I would say formulaic, because it's kind of an original idea, but the dialogue and characters were like things I've seen 1,000 times before, right?
I mean, they're definitely, like,
when I think of a Tina Fey sitcom, I think of sharp, sharp stuff. And this did not feel sharp to me at all.
I mean, when I think of a Tina Fey sitcom, I think of Dean Winters being a jerk. We had that. and I don't know, like I found it a decent time. Like this, it's the story of a girl group from the 90s that, you know, went their separate way, and
right,
but
when you say you found it a decent time, you just mean like a decent time, right? Not a good time.
I didn't like bust a gut, but yeah. I would watch more of. I'm gonna watch more of them, probably.
Okay, me, this is just like this is below the cut, you know, in a crowded TV landscape. I don't have the time, quite frankly.
This is it's a Saturday afternoon. I want to watch something light.
Yeah.
Kind of binge. And that's, I imagine, when I will take in the rest of it. I did think Sarah Bareilles. I never know how to say her name.
Yep.
I thought was pretty interesting. And she's pretty much the lead, at least through the pilot. Of the show, and it does a good job. And then Busy Phillips is like, you know, doing fun, goofy Busy Phillips things.
See, I feel like she's wasted in that role. I feel like that role is such a sad caricature, and she's so much better than that.
Oh yeah, I kind of liked it. And I'm excited for, I believe Andrew Rannells plays her like semi estranged ex husband.
I mean, if there's one thing I'm a little bummed about not being able to watch more for free, it is the fact that I would like to see the Busy Phillips, Andrew Rannells dynamic, because that does look funny.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it could be one of those things that I think maybe develops more. The pilot is not amazing, but it goes down easy. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah. I'm not trying to hate on it too much. Just this was not, I guess, like, in a crowded TV landscape on an app, you have to pay extra to watch this stuff. Like, you should dazzle me with whatever you make available for free. And if it takes you 3 episodes to get good, then give me 3 episodes, you know?
Yeah, well, that's an NBC thing, I'm assuming.
You know, well, whoever it is, that's my point.
Would you say this is worse than Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt?
Yes. Significantly, in my view.
Oh, yeah. See, I think, I don't know, that, you know, maybe you might have a higher opinion of Kimmy Schmidt than I do.
I at least felt like Kimmy Schmidt was original and funny off the bat. And this I felt like was rote and, you know.
Yeah.
A couple smiles, but not.
Some other ones he did were Great News, which I didn't watch.
Didn't watch
it. Seemed like that. And then that Mr. Mayor show that I didn't finish. You did finish that, right?
I watched a lot of it. I don't remember if I finished it. I was very sick at the time. But I enjoyed that. I thought that was funny and interesting in a way that this was not.
Yeah. Okay. Did you find Hacks to be funny and interesting?
Hacks, I loved.
And how many of these did you watch?
All of what was available when I was watching. I'm not sure if one or two more came out. I think 4.
Okay, gotcha. So I saw the first 2. HBO Max is putting this out piecemeal, which seems to be kind of the trend now, and I'm still not totally sure I'm in it.
I kind of like the chunks at a time. I don't mind that. I don't mind that. Although, I will say, if there had been 8 of these, I would have watched all 8. So, I guess, take from that what you will, HBO Max. But, to me, like, I don't know if it's much more than just I love Jean Smart, and I think the whoever the young woman is playing opposite her is also really funny. I just think this is like fun fodder for a show, and they're both really good, and that's pretty much all it is. It's just the two of them.
Yeah, Jean Smart's great. You know, Christopher McDonald as like the jerky casino owner is great, and then lots of people, I think interesting people, sort of flit in and out of the show from what I can tell.
Yeah, do a couple episodes. Shooter McGavin, if you don't know who Christopher McDonald is.
Shooter. I mean, that guy's been in a million things.
He's
going to be a Shooter, right?
He's a that guy.
Yeah, in a way. It's well written. I believe Jen Statsky, who was on Parks and Rec, and mm-hmm. I think The Good Place and a few other chore things, is at the helm of this show. And it's interesting, and it's an interesting exploration of this relationship. And, you know, we've seen now a fair amount of shows about outspoken female comics.
I like it.
And it seems wholly different from the other ones, I feel like.
I agree. And do you feel like this is a Joan Rivers-y thing?
A little bit, although I feel like Mrs. Maisel's more Joan Rivers-y, if that makes sense.
Well, it's like 2 different eras, 2 different times in Joan Rivers' life, right?
Yeah, yeah. This is more like late period Joan Rivers, I guess.
I mean,
she could be right. She could be Phyllis Diller too, in a way, right? Like, uh-huh. You know, obviously the time sort of is a little different.
Well, she's like a woman of a certain age, right? That like came up when, first of all, there were barely comedians, and second of all, there certainly were no women comedians, and then. I mean, the thing that really reeks of Joan Rivers is the, like, almost had her own late night show, you know?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of what female comic would be selling stuff on QVC right now.
Joan Rivers, right?
Well, I mean, Joan, she's dead, right?
But, I mean, if she were alive,
like, it seems like she would, yeah, but I don't know that, like, has there been? I mean, Ellen, it seems like someone who would be selling stuff on QVC.
Probably not now, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe she's scandaling herself into into that role.
Into a Vegas residency?
Has, I believe she has a furniture design competition show coming out in a second. But I think that's a labor of love for her.
Great. Congratulations.
What a weird-ass Ellen tangent I just went on.
That was weird. Also just a weird scandal. Anyway.
It is a very weird scandal.
Not to trivialize it, I don't know how much more there is to say about this show, but like it is this, whether you want to think of it as Joan Riversy or Phyllis Diller-y, it is this woman comedian of a certain age who is, you know, reckoning with her aging process and the way the industry treats women as they age. And also, it's really funny. And also, there's a young woman dealing with, like, trying to stand up for women alongside, you know, an incredibly, remarkably successful woman who doesn't see it the same way she does. You know, it's a really interesting show as well as being a really funny one.
I think we got to a point in time where we were just watching a lot of shows about difficult men. And I'm not saying this is the first show about difficult woman. But the fact that this woman is sort of difficult and occasionally problematic and whatever, I think makes it more interesting. You know what
Absolutely.
I mean?
And it makes the part more interesting. And Jean Smart is just fantastic, man.
Yeah, man. The Jean Smartissance just keeps rolling on.
It's a beautiful thing. Like, what a time to be alive that, like, you know, this tremendous lady actor in, what, her 60s maybe is having this incredible moment.
Yeah. I'm proud of us that we were talking about the Smartissance even before this show.
True story, man. It's been a couple of years now where, like, all of a sudden, you know, you had seen her here and there, but all of a sudden she's everywhere. She's 69, for God's sakes, and having this, like, wild Smartissance.
Yeah, it's pretty great. The Times wrote about it last week, actually, so it really is, like, a real
thing. It's a thing.
I feel like we jumped on it early.
Absolutely.
All right. So next up on my list is Those Who Wish Me Dead, which is the Angelina Jolie movie in theaters now. I feel like I need to provide you a little context for my viewing experience for Those Who Wish Me Dead. You watched it on HBO Max, I'm going to assume?
I did, but in honor of your theater experience, I took out the backyard projector and blasted it onto a pretty big screen. So, what I'm about to say, I do not feel like is diminished. I don't feel like my experience was diminished by screen size.
Gotcha. So, did I tell you where I watched it? I know I haven't told the audience.
You did not.
So, I watched this not at the movie theater.
Drive-in?
I watched it at a drive-in.
Yeah, okay, you did say that. I don't know if it was on the pod or not.
I went to a drive-in movie theater. And watch this. And this is a thing that I learned at this drive-in movie theater that maybe I knew once upon a time. It's not the first time I've been to a drive-in. Were you aware that drive-ins are generally double features?
Yes.
Yeah, that totally escaped me.
So what else did you see?
So I also watched Wrath of Man, Jason Statham Guy Ritchie.
That's a decent. Okay. So. I wish I had seen that instead.
You do, because it was better. It was definitely better.
This film was terrible. Like, it made no sense. It did not end in any sort of meaningful way. The characters were extremely confusing and poorly developed. And the whole thing turned on, like, Angelina Jolie's a hotshot firefighter and some kids died, so now she's going to save a kid. Like, I mean, it was an insult to, because it definitely felt like a deliberate throwback to 90s style action. And it was an insult to a genre that I have a lot of love for.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it was the cast was wasted a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, there's
totally
definitely
wasted
people in this. I did think the John Barenthal performance was pretty good.
He's always good, but, like, what is he doing?
You know, yeah, he doesn't, like, he's doing the most with what kind of what he can do.
I mean, what is the character doing?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. What they just.
He's being a stoic local sheriff is what he's doing.
And dying for no reason. Like, the whole thing is goofy.
Did you like Aidan Gillen and Nicholas Hoult as the, as the cleaners?
My wife spent 15 minutes convincing our friend who came over for the outdoor movie night that was the kid from About a Boy.
Was she successful?
Well, yeah, eventually she Googled
she had the
it.
Internet, right?
Yeah. But again, like, the cast is fine. Angelina Jolie's fine. The roles are terrible.
Like, I thought it was extremely weird. Like, didn't you think when they show her in the beginning and she's like, you know, horsing around with the other smoke jumpers or whatever, that you were going to see those guys again and that they were going to do some smoke jumping?
Yeah. Do anything besides show up at the very, quote, end of the movie, since it's not really an ending. Yeah, I kind of thought they'd be involved in the film in some way. By the way, like, Littlefinger and About a Boy just don't like shooting pregnant ladies on principle, but everything, like, they'll murder the hell out of the rest of the city. I don't like what.
Yeah.
That's totally unexplained. It's just like, well, we got to keep the pregnant lady alive to save them later. So, like, we can't just have them kill her.
Right. And they were this was after they were like, literally, well now we got to kill everybody.
Everybody.
This, right.
They very calmly say, I guess we got to kill everybody now. And they're like, yep, everyone's going to have to die. And then they're like, oh, crap, a pregnant lady. We didn't see this in our plans. We can't kill one of them. Like, what is going on?
I don't know. I also think, like, Angelina Jolie needs to play at least a semi-regular person in something. You know what I mean? Like,
can she, though? Is she, like, the just sort of... It's not even that she's so extremely hot. I mean, she's a very attractive woman. It's like she's so particularly movie star-ish looking. It's like asking The Rock to play a normal person, maybe?
I guess. It's kind of a distraction, isn't it, though? You know what I mean? Like, her presence... sort of a distraction in this movie, I feel like.
Well, she doesn't make sense, really. It's like, nothing makes sense in this movie, so it's hard to be critical about any one part of it more than any other part of it, right? I don't know, man.
I don't know.
You're right. Like, fundamentally, it seems like what you're saying to me is, like, watching Angelina Jolie do what she had to do in this film doesn't make sense. And I would say you're right, but I could say that about any single aspect of the movie.
Yeah.
It's more about the movie than her.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a great setup for her.
It's a weird choice for her, though. It's been how long since she just, like, picked a movie and acted and was the star and that was sort of it. And this is the movie you choose. It's weird.
Yeah. I feel like she directed something, you know, like she's been acting and stuff.
That's what I'm saying. She's been, like, directing stuff, like producing stuff. But, like, this is a choice to step back into this role as a movie star. And it's this. It's a weird choice.
Apparently, she was in a movie in 2020 called Come Away. I have no idea what it is.
Come sail away. Come sail away. Come sail away
with
me.
With Gugu Mbatha-Raw.
With who?
With Gugu Mbatha-Raw.
Oh. Yeah. Good actor. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
anyway, Those Who Wish Me Dead, or whatever the hell it's called, was terrible. I cannot recommend it. If you're looking for an actual 90s action movie, I did retweet Mina Kimes' top 5 list earlier today, which I thought was pretty good.
Okay. And I would say if you like 90s action movies, then you probably would enjoy The Wrath of Man.
Yeah, man, I want to see that.
You know, guy, it's gay. I mean, it's what you'd expect from a Guy Ritchie movie.
Yeah, sometimes I want to see a Guy Ritchie movie, and I'm glad that those exist for me to watch it at those times.
Yeah, it's set in America, but, you know, Statham's bringing the British quotient. And,
yeah. Is there fighting and accents? Great. I'm in.
There's some fighting and accents and a whole lot of shooting.
Great. Love it.
Yeah. And it has some surprises. I'll say that.
Lock, so, stock, and two smoking men. Let's go.
Yeah, so maybe check that out. All right, and that brings us to probably the most watched thing. You can tell we just did this in the order I wrote it, because I left Master of None for last. Huh. I only watched one of these. Did you watch a bunch?
Well, yeah. So after the first one, they get much shorter for a few.
Oh, man, I would have watched more if I knew that.
Exactly. And then later it gets longer again. So I watched 3 or 4 right up to the point where it gets longer again. I think I watched 4 because I think I watched 1 long one, the first one, and then three short ones, if I'm remembering correctly. You only watched one. That's going to make it a little tough to talk about this.
Okay. I did find it a little not tough to talk about because I've always liked this show, and sort of its vibe, and that vibe is still here.
Yeah.
The first episode's called Moments in Love, and I think that was really a good, that's a great title for it.
Spoiler
that's kind
alert.
Of what it was. Yeah.
Spoiler alert. They're all called Moments in Love.
They're all called Moments in Love. That's the whole season.
That's
Moments
the season.
In Love.
Five parts, yeah. Moments in Love. But I think one of the wonderful things about the artistry of this show is that as the season goes on, unlike some of the things that I at least have been very critical of, you very clearly see those moments in love, not unlike the pixelated Bob Marley photo, they start to form a more coherent picture as the show moves along.
Because the first episode does feel, I think, a lot like a collection of moments.
Well, but
I mean?
Even as the first episode moves along, right? Like, I would say the first 30 minutes of the hour are entirely a collage of moments in love of this couple, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Aziz shows up, right?
Yeah. Which I felt like from a... story propulsion standpoint was needed.
Well, it's sort of where the story per se begins, and that leads us, and I'll spoil the first episode because I think I may even spoil some of the rest of the season for you in a minute, but after Aziz shows up, they decide to try to have a baby, right?
Right.
And then remind me how episode one ends.
So they lost the child.
There it is. I just wanted to make sure that was I wasn't confused that was episode two.
Yeah, there's a fight after that.
Right. Do you mind a mild spoiler?
I'm gonna guess they don't break up just from the title. is that a spoiler or no?
The spoiler is exactly that you're incorrect about that. They do break up almost immediately. Gotcha. And as far as I can tell, the rest of the show is about the dissolution of a relationship and what happens after that, which makes the title all the more interesting. I think
sucker me.
Yeah, they did. And I think while they continue to, in a certain way, tell the story via moments as opposed to via a particularly plot liney. It's like a certain way of presenting a story, right? And even with the Aziz scene and the baby stuff, like, it's still more a series of moments to tell the story than it is like a story told traditionally, right?
Yeah.
And I would say that more or less continues, but it's more of the nature of the second half of the episode than the first. And throughout, there are still, still shots of a piece of a fence. You know what I mean? Like, it is definitely a ponderous viewing, but I think it's done very deliberately to create a mood around a relationship and life and, the dissolution of a relationship and the what happens to those people. Like, it's very artfully done. It's very interestingly acted. The woman who plays Lena Waithe's wife, I don't know her
Naomi
name.
Naomi Aki.
What's name. That?
Naomi Aki is her name.
She's excellent. And Lena Waithe is...
Right? They're not married, correct?
I believe they're married in the show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And Lena Waithe plays such a very specific role that, does feel like it's at least somewhat based on Lena Waithe, but... At the same time, it's very specifically the role she played as a side character in the first two seasons, right?
No, this is definitely Denise. You know what I mean? And
right. Like, we know Denise, and this is definitely her.
I happened to listen to Alan Yang on Simmons this morning, and he was talking about how they had thought about doing, they have had a couple of Denise focused episodes, and they thought about doing a season on Denise a few times, and this just sort of seemed like a time to go with that.
Yeah, anyone who thought it was like Aziz backing off, he wrote and directed what seems like every episode, so I don't think that was the case. They made a choice to tell a different story, and I think there are a lot of interesting choices here, and I found it really quite good.
The way that they put it was we got tired of, or we felt like we'd run out of stories to tell about a guy running around New York and really enjoying tacos.
Right.
And I do think that that is true to the character more than like what was happening in Aziz's life. I also think it was a really interesting choice to bring him in as sort of like, you know, at this point in his life where he was in a valley, as Denise puts it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Really struggling both in his relationship life and his career, you know, and just sort of openly pining, you know, for the days that we were running around the city doing whatever we wanted.
Eating tacos. Yeah. No, it's fascinating. And it's also foreshadowing, you know, like it's a really interesting show, and it is definitely a little like art filmy. But if you are into that, I would highly recommend it.
It's extremely art filmy. That's part of the whole premise of this series, right? Is that they,
They did a friggin' French new wave tribute in one of the seasons, right?
Yeah. They like weird classic movies and do stuff influenced by that. And it's a ton of references that I don't get. So,
I don't know if I get like maybe 5% more than you do, but I don't get much.
Yeah, you might get 5% more than I do. By the way, you should be getting ready to see a lot of Naomi Ackie.
Good. She's great. This show has two people in it for the most part, and they're both great.
Yeah. She was in Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker.
I remember that.
Yeah. But she is in the Game of Thrones prequel pilot, although I don't know, that may be the one they scrapped.
Oh.
And she's playing Whitney Houston in I Want to Dance with Somebody.
Oh.
Yeah, so
that is very interesting. I'm excited. I wonder how her American accent is.
So she was also in Small Axe.
I don't remember her in Small Axe.
She played a woman named Hazel in the Education episode. I'm not sure that I saw that. That might have been the one I didn't get to.
Huh. Yeah, we never finished Small Axe, did we?
That's the one I didn't watch.
Yeah. Well, that explains why we didn't. I think we got depressed enough that the last Small Axe seemed like not a priority.
Yeah, you didn't watch one in a school, right? That's she's in the one in a school.
Yeah, that feels like one I didn't watch.
Yeah, fair enough. Can I pitch one completely tangential bitch about Master of None?
Of course.
It's entirely arcane, but the sneakerhead in me, Denise, I mean, you know, Denise leveled up on her career and clearly is affording very nice shoes. In fact, like even the flip-flops or the slides she's wearing are Gucci.
Uh-huh.
But the woman is out there feeding chickens in a pair of Jordan 5 What Thes.
Yeah.
You know, which go for, I don't know, probably $400, I would guess, on the secondary market. And she's literally feeding chickens in the dirt, in the mud. And I'm like, it drove me nuts.
I 100% noticed that.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I mean, that of all of the silly flexes that, that was obviously done on purpose, right?
Yes, because she wears much less expensive Jordans, like in the house, and several other points in time.
Right, they know. Like, I guarantee you, Lena Waithe knows how much those cost.
Oh yeah,
and that's
Lena Waithe, your sneakerhead.
Right, you know? So like that's a flex, and it's a hilariously niche flex for nobody.
Yeah, for
which
me,
is kind of right. I think. Well, no, but I mean, like within the show, for nobody. Which I think is sort of a reflection of what one of the things the show is saying. That's what's cool about this show is it's thoughtful down to that level. Like that is a definite specific choice that they made that you and I noticed.
And while she's doing it, she's having a great conversation to herself about the beef between her various chickens, which I think was also pretty funny.
Yeah, and like she basically sings to the chickens.
Yeah, Yeah, no, it's good. And this show is, like, you can tell that little moments and things are obsessed over in that, you know.
Yes.
The house, you know, knowing that the one, you know, one of the persons is an interior design person, like, you can tell that they fuss over it. And some of it's discussed and some of it is not. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, and you watch her fuss to an extent over things throughout the house, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The house is sort of a character in the show as it moves on. It, there's so much here. It's it is a rich text, as the haute critique might say.
Indeed. All right, that's what we got for this week. We're doing good on time.
We did get through it reasonably quickly.
Yeah. Oh shoot. Oh shoot. We didn't talk about Top Chef.
Yeah, we're not going to be done for a while, huh?
Darn it. All right. Because Top Chef also a rich text this week, because it's Restaurant Wars, man.
Did you realize, we knew it was an open kitchen. Did you realize it was a chef's table?
I did not realize it was a chef's table from the preview. Obviously, they get to that pretty quick.
Yeah, no, nor did I. So that was a surprise, and boy, did it make it interesting. And I think it led to the thing that sort of turned the challenge. But I think the first thing we have to say is, before, tell me if you're with me here, before the judges really said anything, certainly before the end of the meal or any like wrap-up discussion of the meal, I was looking at Cocosone and saying that might be the best Restaurant Wars, like, overall effort I have ever seen.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things. Well, I wasn't quite thinking that, but I was definitely thinking, like, oh, it's going to be a massive upset if they lose. You know, which I wouldn't have thought just based on the forming of the teams.
No, in fact, it was just the opposite. This is, if anything, this is an incredible argument for or statement about the importance of teamwork for Restaurant Wars.
Yeah. And concept and cohesion.
That's
and I
all
think
teamwork,
planning.
Right? I mean, all that cohesion and planning and working together, that's the working together. Every single person who steps on Top Chef has the skills to be highly productive at a really good restaurant, because that's how they got here. The question is, who comes up with the right concept and can execute all the pieces of it? And that always comes down to teamwork.
Yeah. I thought Shota did a fantastic job as sort of the, you know, executive chef's ringleader.
And it all hinged on Maria's front of the house.
Yeah. And one, she made some great dishes, too.
But again, they're all capable of that. And yeah, there were a couple mistakes with the other Penny's meal. But I got to say, like, I think if they had presented it better, we would have heard less in the way of complaints.
I think that is true. And I would also say, though, however, even though, you know, I think front of house wound up being a significant differentiator in the two experiences and meals, you know, if we're talking about this was the best Restaurant Wars ever, which Tom, you know, said Restaurant Wars restaurant ever, maybe.
Yeah. No, it wouldn't have mattered in the end.
But I also think that it was in some ways maybe easier than some, just, you know, in that they were making so many fewer plates of food and you don't have the right. I mean, a big portion of Restaurant Wars is the stress of keeping the tables and tickets on time and dealing with the servers. Right. And all of that, like, those are staples of that. And, you know, they adjusted to the pandemic and couldn't do any of that. So I'm not like faulting anybody. But the front of house needs were just so much less than other editions of the show. You know what I mean?
But they also had less people. It's you're right that it's marginally easier, but I do think there are different challenges.
Yeah, right? They're different.
So, you know, there are different things that are hard about it. It's probably easier than doing it for 200 people, because, come on, no duh. But I do think there are challenges about doing it this way that probably don't exist in a bigger restaurant format. And like, at a certain level, that's almost beside the point, because you serve one table of food to the judges. And, like, you do the best version of the dish you came up with for that table under any circumstances. And putting aside service, like, the way every judge reacted to every dish of their seven-course progressive meal was unanimous approval. I don't know that I've ever seen that.
Well, that's sort of the flip side, right, of the chef's table thing, is that you're doing seven courses, and there's, I think, an expectation of more elegance and refinement than if you're just doing a restaurant concept.
Well, and cohesion, and you know, progressive, like, and I, you know, this is certainly a novice's interpretation, but, you know, progressive meal to me is different than just a seven course meal per se, in that, like, it speaks specifically to continuity, and
which was a real struggle for the other team.
Totally, because again, teamwork is important in this context, maybe more so even in these restaurants than in a normal restaurant wars. But again, the execution level, I mean, that's what's pretty impressive about this, if anything, is that the actual end execution level of every single dish was on point and, like, excellent, and not a single judge deferred on any of them, I don't think. And then, you know, that's just not something I think I've ever seen, and especially because it was almost the top four chefs against the bottom four. I mean, there was, like, you know, Shota,
right,
flipped, but other than that, it was like everybody who's a heavy hitter against all the people who, like, of course are good, but they don't stand out as favorites.
Yeah. Less consistent, I would say, would be the way you describe the other chefs, right?
Yeah, but, like, they got together as a real team and came up with a plan that reflected all of their tastes and flavors, and it was awesome.
Yeah. You know, maybe I'm just biting Brian Malarkey's, you know, prognostication skills, but I'm starting to think we got to watch out for Byron. You know, he's kind of like, he's sort of a little bit under the radar, but every once in a while pops up with, like, some really high level cooking. And
honestly, who do you not have to watch out for at this point, besides maybe Chris? But the thing about Chris is, every time you think you don't have to watch out for him, someone else goes home. Like,
yeah, it's true. Well, I was worried about, you know, they gave Byron, and I think maybe they're finally just faking people out with the calls home now. You know what I mean? Because it seems like there's a few times this season.
Yeah.
Where it's like home to family, and you're like, and they're just fine. I would be, yeah, I know she won this episode, and I would say deservedly, but I would be surprised with Maria too. You know, she just hasn't been on the top very much, if at all.
But the, like, it feels like she's really coming into her own right at the right time, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's hard. It's hard. I think she's in a tough spot being a chef that is cooking in, you know, this Mexican style, being on the same show as Gabe. You know what I mean?
Sure, but I do think there are distinct differences between their styles, and I think we are getting to the point of the show where they're going to start to be like, cook your food, and that, I think, will benefit her. So, I don't know. We'll see. But you're right. If she's at the bottom, if we're power ranking, you know, it's probably Maria and Chris. That might be the bottom two, but I don't know. Like, it wouldn't
she's
be shocking.
She's only been in the top three one other time.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be shocking if she somehow pulled this off, because they're all so good, and just because anyone weak now, we're at the point where anyone weak, any of them can go home.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we talked about it last week.
Or at least go to Last Chance Kitchen, which, did you watch?
I did not watch Last Chance.
Well, Sarah won.
Okay. Yeah, I can't say I'm stunned at that. Sarah was the only one, right, who hadn't been on the bottom at all. And then she was out. But, you know, that is a Restaurant Wars tradition, right?
Like, sort of.
A highly chef kind of dropping the ball in Restaurant Wars and winding up going home. I mean, we had Kristen Kish, you know, on this episode where it happened to her.
I kind of couldn't believe
he wasn't deserving of going home either, by the
well,
way.
Well, no. Yeah, I mean, but like, wasn't it sort of six of one, half dozen of the other with Chris, except he has been at the bottom all year?
And Gabriel, honestly, anybody but Don, I felt like could have gone home, which they all said.
Wait, it was it's Gabe now, not Gabriel, right?
It is Gabe, I believe. Yes, yeah. So, and that was his first time on the bottom as well.
Yeah, yeah.
That, but I mean, that tart, you know, it's tough. You know, you send someone home on a moosh boosh, I guess, is tough. But
it was, but like, it didn't have it to exist.
Yeah.
Like, you already have a 7-course meal. Chill. Serving the biggest course as an amuse-bouche is just weirdo shit. Like, what are you doing?
It was a little bit weird. Yeah, and they just didn't seem like they had a plan for front of house, which they sort of.
No, they hold on. They specifically, their plan was to not have a plan for front of house, which was insane from the start.
Yeah, I don't know why they went along with that. It was like when Chris, it's like Chris saying, I'm going to do ribs, and nobody saying anything. It was like Gabe going, let's not have a plan for front of house. And everybody being like, yeah, cool, good idea.
Great, yeah, we'll just all hands on deck it. No worries. Like, what? Why?
Yeah,
I don't know. I guess maybe the question is, who do you put out there?
Yeah. Well, I mean, for something like this, I mean, looking at that team, you're right, it is a little bit tough. It's the easiest front of house in the history of the show, right?
I know.
Like, it's all people you know.
But I wonder if Gabe looked at the team and was like, shit, it's going to be me. And so he was like, let's not do it.
Man, you can be in the kitchen, keep an eye on them. It's not like you have to worry about moving tables or any of that stuff.
No,
right?
I get it. But again, I feel like Gabe may have looked around and been like, they're going to make me do it. I'm just going to suggest we have nobody do it.
Yeah. I will say Dawn made some excellent dishes, but I don't think her energy helped the vibe of that kitchen, if that makes sense. Right.
Okay.
I think that also contributed to the, you know.
But Dawn, I mean, perhaps this is a related comment, but like Dawn definitely has back of the house energy. Not front of the house energy.
Yes. No, she would have been the worst person for front of the house, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's a back of the house lady. And Sarah probably is too, right? Which is exactly why we're getting to where we're getting. You know
yeah,
I mean?
But at least Sarah could have been like self effacing and like mildly charming, you know?
Right. And we saw Chris like, you know, make a joke and it went So that was a rough one.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I thought it was real. I thought they adapted to the, you know, the pandemic conditions well. And I thought it was interesting. We talked about the concept of doing an open kitchen. I hope they keep that, you know, because not like you need a chef's table set up to do an open kitchen.
Agreed.
You know, I hope we see that in future ones, because I do think it adds quite a bit to be able to see everybody work.
And for
the chefs to be able to see the judges and hear the judges, you know, eat the food, right? Watch them eat the food.
Yeah, but I don't know that works quite that way if it's a full open dining room, you know.
Well, they have a lot less time to sort of pay attention.
Yeah, and they and just not it's loud.
Here. Yeah. 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 It'll be interesting. So you watched Last Chance Kitchen, Sarah won, but they're not bringing her back yet, right? She's going to face some more people.
Correct. She remains in Last Chance Kitchen for now.
I think that she would be favored against most people that would come down there, right? So,
I mean, she's not going to be a big underdog against anyone, that's for sure.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see. Yeah, all in all,
but you know, like, if Shota gets bumped next episode, that's gonna be a banger in Last Chance Kitchen.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think our sort of reading of the top four chefs, it still seems fairly clear to me. And then you know, there's some you know people like Byron who I think have a chance to kind of break into that mix, maybe. And you know, some people you were talking about Jamie's been kind of on a roll, and I wouldn't say that I wouldn't say that didn't continue. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I thought she did well.
She did some great noises this week. I'm loving Jamie, man. Jamie has really become one of my faves.
How can you not? Right? I mean, everybody loves Jamie. Boop. Clearly, everyone on the show loves Jamie. So, all right. I think that's enough Top Chef, right? You ready to get out of here?
Yeah, I think we still kind of did a short show, so congratulations to us. What do we got for homework?
Well, I'm going to call an audible right now. This is something we did not discuss in the show meeting.
Oh, boy.
So I'm just springing this on you, but it is something that I've been meaning to do, and I just forgot when we were doing the homework. So here it goes. I'm going to demand, as it wraps up this week, that you finish Mayor of Easttown. Can you do that?
Yeah, I'll get it done, yeah.
How many episodes is that?
Several, for but you. I'll get it done.
Yeah, you can do it?
I'll get you'll it done.
That's my
I
prediction.
Pledge to you I'll get it done.
Is that you'll thank me? Okay, so we'll do that. We're going to have Top Chef, obviously. And then maybe would you want to add one more thing to that? Or are you good there?
Yeah, I think we're going to do this movie Plan B, right?
We're going to do Plan B, yeah. Okay.
It's directed by Natalie Morales, who, you know, if you've watched romantic comedies over the last 20 years, you've seen her face, and it stars, among others, among some younger ladies, Edie Patterson, who, if you've seen any of Danny McBride's shows over the last few years, you are familiar with, and we like all of those people, so let's do this.
Yeah, it looks interesting. It's getting some good reviews. Should we tack on the Friends reunion, since I think that's going to be an easy watch?
Yes, the Friends reunion as well. Since I have seen every episode of Friends at least 4 times, I might as well check this out.
I didn't know that you were like a huge Friends head. I don't think I knew that.
Well, before there was How I Met Your Mother, I had to watch something else, you know, 3 or 4 times through.
Yeah, I can't say that I'm shocked. So I've definitely also seen every episode of Friends, but that was mostly during the original run. Like, I haven't been a person who's been like Netflix binging it.
No, it's not Netflix. But I haven't watched Friends in years. It's, you know, friends of mine in college had the DVDs.
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
There was a lot of late night friendsing. You know what I'm saying?
I would guess I've seen most of them twice, but I'm not one of those like 4 times people. And I haven't seen, you know, other than a spare minute here or there when it pops up somewhere. You know what I mean? Like, I haven't seen it in a while.
I'm also old enough to remember when, like, on a sick day, the only thing to watch was the Friends marathon on TBS, you know?
Yes. Yeah, for sure.
So
all right,
that
well,
accounts for probably one full viewing of the show for me.
I'm excited about all that. Do you want to mention anything about the NBA before we go?
It's where amazing happens, and if you're not watching the playoffs, you're really missing out, because it's spectacular stuff.
Even, like, I thought last, you know, the Portland-Denver game last night was a good example, because it was a game that ultimately wasn't that close,
not
per se,
close, but man, wildly entertaining.
And it's funny to me, because, like, you know, I'm watching NBA Twitter, and people are like, Dame, you know, Dame, see, this is, you thought it was crazy when I picked Portland. And I'm like, meanwhile, Portland's giving up 70 points a half.
You're losing by 20.
Yeah, and losing by 20. And yeah. Like, Dame's still awesome. It's, you know what I mean? It's in the same way that Steph Curry's been awesome, but the team's not good, you know?
They got problems, but they may still beat Denver, because Denver is pretty injured at this point, too.
Yeah, Denver has some problems of their own. The West feels weirdly wide open. Are
it
you
is
worried
wide
about
the hell open. I have both LA teams losing in the first round, which was an ambitious upset pick, but not looking so stupid at this moment. Let's see what happens tonight.
It is not looking so stupid. I still think the Lakers are going to beat Phoenix, but
I mean, they certainly should, but will they? Let's see.
You know, a lot of that depends on what Chris Paul looks like tonight, though, I think, too. And clearly Anthony Davis, although I just don't think Anthony Davis is going to come out and be that bad again. I just don't.
Would you give Chris Paul the night off?
I would.
Yeah.
He couldn't dribble to his right or shoot.
Well, but like some,
but I would also say they seemed better when he was on the floor despite all that.
Agreed. Also, have you ever had a stinger?
I have not had a stinger.
You know, it depends how bad it is, obviously, but a lot of times like that the dead arm goes away after a day, you know? So it'll be interesting to see what they do tonight.
He said crack though, which is not usually, I think, something that you would associate with a stinger, right?
yeah, you feel like a, yeah, it's like a crack, like when you crack your back, you know?
Mm. Okay. Well, we'll see. You know, maybe he'll be better and it's a non-factor, in which case then maybe you do like Phoenix Suns.
I mean, it's still not going to be a non-factor. Like, he's going to feel beat up from it, but, you know, if he can be moderately effective, he helps the team. It'll be really interesting. Well, a 2-0 lead for them, even though they're the home team, would be a big, big deal.
I agree. I feel like the Lakers have some issues as a team. Like, this is not a great team.
Well, the biggest issue is, does LeBron have enough juice prepared and stored up in the tank at this point after being injured to carry the team for the lengths of time he has to carry the team for them to beat the Suns?
Right. And I think the longer, you know, should they get by the Suns, well, you know what I mean? Like, the longer they're in the playoffs, the more likely they are to become the Lakers that you're sort of thinking they're going to be.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's very clear that LeBron has decided the way for him to peak at the right time is to build throughout the playoffs. But that's what's interesting about this series, is that because of the matchup, I don't know that he has the luxury of building. I think he may have to accelerate that. But we'll see. We'll see if Anthony Davis shows up to play point guard or power forward tonight, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, he hasn't shot it very well from outside. He's been, you know,
here's
fine.
The secret. He's not a great shooter.
Yeah.
He's better than a lot of guys that size. He moves and dribbles and does all that stuff better than a lot of guys that size. But if he's not in the paint, he's helping the other team.
Yeah.
Get in the paint, Anthony Davis, is what I would say if I were Frank Vogel.
Yeah.
And this, the fact that they have to, like, force him into the paint by playing him at center, which he says he doesn't like, is the dumbest thing ever. Just get in the paint, you gigantic man.
Yeah. Also, I don't know. I don't know about having four centers. You know what I mean? They still seems like they're figuring some things out. Like, they don't quite know how to use Drummond. Then it's a completely different team when Harrell shows up. Let's go to Davis at the five. And,
yeah.
You know,
I mean, here's the thing.
They need to figure this out.
I just don't know how many times we have to see as a basketball watching public that you can't just throw an NBA team together and play pickup to win a title before we, like, realize it in advance.
Yeah. Well, the Nets are also going to test that theory.
Yeah. Yeah. They are, and I just – that's why I don't think they'll win. It is.
Mm. Yeah,
I am – although I have to say, I am less confident in any even finals matchup pick than maybe ever before in my life on either side. No, I just – I think it could be like 7 teams in the West and – 4 or 5 in the East.
Okay, so what's the one team you don't think it could be?
It's not going to be the Grizzlies.
Yeah, see, I think it's like...
God love the Grizzlies, but they're not.
It's not going to be the Blazers either. They might be Denver, but they're not going to the finals.
You're probably right. But if they... I mean, here's the thing. If the second round matchup is the Suns, I don't know. It's hard to say. It's really hard to say. Even if it's 6 in the West and 4 in the East, that's pretty nuts.
It is pretty nuts. Do you think it's 4 in the East?
It's at least 3.
Yeah, I think it's 3. I don't. Do you see is your fourth the Knicks or the Hawks or?
I mean, I guess it would be Miami, but I did pick them to lose to the Bucks, so it's probably 3.
I think I watch out for the Bucks.
That's what I'm saying.
Sleep on the Bucks a little.
And watch out for Philly, even though their first game was underwhelming. Anyway, we've talked. Wait, see, dude.
We had a short show and I blew it. Sorry.
Dude. We did all the homework, right? This show's over, right?
Yeah, all right, bye.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.